Welcome to Clinically Relevant, a podcast dedicated to professional insights with healthcare leaders throughout the country. Spend some time with your host, Katie Gibson, as she speaks with healthcare leaders from various specialties and explores how they learn and grow, innovate, and adapt.
Hi, I am Katie Gibson. I'm a nurse, more specifically a women's health nurse practitioner. And I started my career here in Charleston, South Carolina, 10 years ago. I worked for private practice here. But more recently, in the last couple of years, I joined a healthcare consulting and recruiting firm. And big change from my former life to now. But one of the best parts of my job is that I frequently get to talk to nurses and clinical leaders across healthcare in different specialties that I've never run into before. And so many clinical leaders have carved out these very interesting, unique specialties, grown businesses, or even created personal brands. And I'm fascinated by the work that they've done. So I thought it got me thinking, let's share these compelling stories of people who've taken the conventional role of nurse or provider and use that as a springboard to create new and exciting kind of subspecialties and distinguish themselves uniquely in the industry. So that's where the idea for the podcast kind of grew from. The goal with our interviews on Clinically Relevant, the name of the podcast, it's to share unique stories of healthcare leaders and innovators. And for our very first episode, we're tapping an expert very close to our hearts here at LeaderStat, Teresa Ramey. And Teresa is the director of consulting for LeaderStat. She's an expert clinician, has been a nurse for how many years now, Teresa?
38.
That's amazing. And I tell anyone who will listen that the consulting team at LeaderStat is what really sets LeaderStat apart. It is what the consulting team embodies, our core value of expertise, and really makes us different than just a staffing firm. I really believe that in my heart and soul. So, Teresa, hello. Thank you for joining me on our very first episode.
We're podcast newbies
here, but it's exciting. Thank you for making the time to do this. I know you have had a crazy year. We've all had a crazy year, but you in particular, you've been extremely busy and really in demand because of your expertise. And so I want to talk about the pandemic and how that has changed your role in the last year. But first, tell us about yourself.
And thank you for having me today, Katie. I really appreciate that. So I 38 years, that's a long time. And it sounds, I should be really feel like I'm really old, but I'm not. But basically, I started out in a nursing center as a CNA and worked my way into all kinds of different departments, but knew in fifth grade, I wanted to be a nurse. You know, I started out as a CNA and worked through nursing school and, when they needed someone to fill in the laundry, I did that. When they needed someone to cook in the kitchen, I did that. And I told someone the other day, I've done every role in a nursing center, including admissions, the business office, marketing, the nurse, all those roles, except for the maintenance department. And so I've got, all that behind me and learned how the functions work. But basically, became a nurse 38 years ago and started out, worked the floor and worked in the hospital for a while, but decided my true love was the nursing centers. So I went back there and I have been, a charge nurse, an assistant director of nursing, a director of nursing. I also have been a regional director, as well as a vice president of a couple of different companies, both for operations as well as quality. And I've also been a state surveyor, and I was their supervisor in about a third of the counties, about 28 counties in Ohio out of the 88. So have had a lot of different experience. Most importantly, about 5 years ago, I decided that I really wanted to try to take a change in my career and be able to do more of giving back. I felt like I'd done a little bit of everything in post-acute. I had also worked with home care and hospice and things like that, but really wanted to see how I could help others and take my experience. I had some really great mentors along the way. And those people that mentored me, I wanted to be like that and be able to even mentor more than just the organization I was in. So I had known Leaderstat and had known the CEO for a long time, many years. And so just decided at that point that I would reach out, and they had reached out to me and I reached back out and decided it would be a good fit. So that's how I ended up at Leaderstat, and basically now I'm able to work with people all across the country, which is really fulfilling for me.
That mentorship piece is so important. I think it is one of most leaders that I've talked to, whether in healthcare or otherwise, talk about this, those people in their career who really helped kind of give them a boost and educate them and share their skills with them. And I think you hit the nail on the head. That's what I hope our conversations can be in Clinically Relevant, is talking about the professional development side and being innovative and learning how to take your career in a new direction, because there's so much we can do with nursing. It's really amazing. Your incredible experience, you know, the skilled nursing facility industry, inside and out. Last March, when did you start to realize, holy cow, this is really happening? The post-acute world is going to be turned upside down. Was it a clear moment for you, or was it something that kind of gradually you realized?
Well, it's a great question. When I look back, you know, it almost seems like something that surreal, something that you've lived through, but
but it's still happening.
There's that defining moment. So like there's some moments in time that are markers for me. So I was at a conference in San Antonio, and I had heard, and I met this lawyer there that was very involved with one of the first centers that had the outbreak on the West Coast. And she was getting phone calls, you know, I was sitting right with her, and she was telling me about this virus, you know, and how this virus was hitting their nursing centers. And, you know, I was watching everything. Everybody was using hand sanitizer, but, you know, I was traveling. I was on an airplane. I was, you know, in another state. Still, it did not really hit me until I got back. And that week is when the governor started shutting down, you know, the schools and things like that. Well, that was like on a Thursday. And by that next day, I started getting calls from people in the nursing centers. Like my phone was ringing off the hook. By the next week, I actually just looked at this. And on March the 23rd of last year is when we had our first huge outbreak in Ohio. And I was called in on that and asked to assist them. We had, you know, not only residents, but also staff with a huge outbreak. And we had to help them navigate how to get through that, try to minimize, you know, the mortalities and try to keep everyone as safe as possible. And so that was really two of my first defining moments. And then we had other clients at the same time that were experiencing outbreaks. So there were, in the beginning of this, for the first few weeks, at least, there was, you know, 20 hour days. I mean, literally, I mean, that is no exaggeration. It was crazy. And there was such an unknown, like what was going to happen. And it was very, like when I think back, it was very frightening, to be honest with you, because we were working as hard as we could to help and assist, but we really didn't know what we were working against, you know, all the factors, and the PPE supplies really weren't there. And so all the things that I had learned and had taught other people all my life, because I always believe in, you know, trying to do the right thing and making sure people are safe, the PPE supplies weren't always there to be able to follow that. So that was really hard. Like for me personally, that was really, really hard, both personally and professionally, to be able, you know, to tell people in centers that were calling me, you know, we only have this many masks, and me having to tell them, well, right now we're being told by CDC to reuse them five times. And then, you know, or something like that, whatever the protocol was at the time. So it's just really having to navigate all of that, try to do what's right in the middle of a pandemic. And at the same time, you know, you're concerned about your work colleagues, you're concerned about your family and concerned about your own health, because yeah, you know, you have to stay healthy to be able to help others. So it's a very I think that would be my defining moments, was really right in the very, you know, middle of March in that time frame.
It's amazing. It was almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah,
everything started to unfold.
Yes.
And it makes me think, you know, we all have our little toolkits, right, that we use in work and in practice. And I know for me, some of the skills that I had to constantly kind of like remind the softer skills remind myself of were things like staying calm when it gets crazy, remembering who needs me first, really focusing on my triage. What in your toolkit, the things that you usually relied upon with clients and with training staff, what did you have to add for COVID? What new skills do you think you had to kind of incorporate on your toes, so to speak? Because like you said, this was completely new to everyone.
Yeah, I think one thing that I learned very quickly was how important we rely on each other, meaning that, you know, a lot of times, like in the skilled nursing center, I mean, we're supposed to be self-sufficient or assisted living or whatever we're dealing with. But during the pandemic, so many decisions were made in conjunction, you know, not only with national initiatives, but state initiatives, but local health departments, local providers. You know, we were very, when I would make decisions, so let's say I was working with different nursing centers in the state of Ohio. And then, you know, that same day, I might be working with people in Kentucky, people in West Virginia. I found out very quickly that I had to adapt to how they were interpreting it, and even down to how that local health department for that county was interpreting it and how to give people advice based on that. So I very quickly, you know, got my, I guess if you think about a toolbox, it would be my mindset, but also very quickly got those certain contacts and people that I could rely on. Maybe it was the emergency management in that particular county, or the emergency management team at the state level, whatever it would be, so that I would be in the know. I was on various calls and where decisions were being made with rapid response and how we was going to roll that out, and would be asked for various questions. Also, the state associations played a key role in that. So I think trying to be in the know and then getting that information, the right information disseminated, because you couldn't tell someone in West Virginia how to follow something they were doing in Ohio. Now, we had CMS guidelines, we had CDC guidelines, but like I said, each governor rolled things out a little different, down to each county health department. So that was probably the biggest thing that I wasn't used to, because I was used to saying, you know, well, if this is how, you know, if this is how often you wear an N95, you know, without changing it, or a gown or whatever, or this is how you do testing based on your positivity rate. And that to this day it's better, but it's still very challenging.
Still there. Absolutely. Even with the vaccines, yeah. I think we've seen that the variation in access and rollout.
Yeah. So there's some days that I think to myself, I mean, I have my own little cheat sheets and everything. And of course, by now, you know, I've got everything. It's just ingrained in my mind. But for the most part, to your point, you know, as they roll out different things, I have to constantly keep that toolbox, you know, up to date, and knowing, you know, which state am I in, which county am I in, and how are they interpreting it, and being able to give the right information, because you know, when people contact me for information, I have to know, because they're looking to me for the answers. Yes. So I can't just, you know, yes, I have to know.
Absolutely. And that brings me to your when you said kind of the network of people that you would reach out to get those good answers, it reminds me you were working so closely with different state officials, kind of at a higher level decision-making, right, for the state and the counties, and then kind of rolling out in the facilities. Would you say that's
yes, that's correct? Accurate. Yes.
And so was that new for you, kind of liaising between government decision makers and on the floor, so to speak, or is this something that you'd done in the past with other?
It was new for me from a standpoint of infection control. It wasn't as new for me, having been a surveyor, having been a supervisor of the surveyors. I was used to working with, let's say, CMS or, you know, state officials, regional offices of CMS, that kind of thing. Related to like survey compliance issues. But when it came to infection control specifically, and then working also with specific officials from like the QIOs or the CDC, that was different, or even to the local health departments, because our emergency management for each county just wasn't, you know, I had to form those connections and those relationships because had not done that before. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it hard to convey to them if they're not used to kind of the nursing home world, what would work and what wouldn't? How did you do that? How did you navigate that?
There were times when, you know, I could tell that they were making the best effort. Like they knew what they knew about it. And of course I knew what I knew about nursing centers. So I feel like that there were times that was so challenging, meaning that, you know, they're trying, you know, some of these government agencies or even local health departments, they're trying to deal with the entire community. I'm focused on the nursing centers. So, and I tried to take that into account. But yeah, it was very challenging. I think that we learned a lot about each other. I think acute care, I've been involved with the echo calls too, which is where they pair up a physician from a hospital system, acute care with a long-term care, what they call SMED, a subject matter expert. And so whether it's the acute care settings, the long-term care settings, the government agencies, all those things, we have learned so much from each other. And I think that the world of long-term care definitely, you know, rose to the top of the concerns with this pandemic.
It's always been apparent to me, and I don't think it's a secret. We talk about this, right? That the long-term care world oftentimes gets sort of forgotten in the healthcare industry, you know, and geriatrics in general are not always given the attention, I think, or the focus that they deserve, whether that be kind of at the regulatory level or even at the community level. Did you see that? I mean, you're such a big advocate for the nursing home community. How did you see that affecting your ability to advocate for the nursing homes during COVID? Was it a problem? Was it a challenge?
Yeah, I think you hit it there. I think it's been very challenging for the people that work in long-term care facilities because they sometimes do feel forgotten. And when they have the most, you know, and now, you know, hindsight's 2020, but when we're in it, you know, we're trying to take care of those. They're such a vulnerable population, the elderly, and they have a lot of comorbidities. And then, you know, we can't get the supplies. This is, you know, when the pandemic, especially in the beginning, we couldn't get the supplies to take care of them or protect ourselves. You know, there's truly a hero type atmosphere that took place because we had so many healthcare workers in long-term care who they were going to take care of their residents no matter what. But at the same time, you know, we had to make sure they were taken care of. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, what I hear from a lot of people, even now, is, well, why were some areas of the healthcare spectrum viewed as, you know, heroes and long-term care was viewed as, you know, you're letting all these people die. Mm-hmm. And so that is something that's still there and I think has to be dealt with about the continuum of care and how important each area is. Because if we ever would go through something like this again, hopefully we will take what we learned from this, what we went through, and apply it so that next time we function as more as a healthcare continuum instead of, you know, focusing in on specific areas, getting all the resources and the help before there's a complete disaster in another.
Is that the goal with ECHO, to kind of build those bridges?
I think so. And to really get people to collaborate and share and ways to understand each other and understand how we can work together in the future. I think it's helped a lot. I was involved in it for 16 weeks straight. It just ended last week.
Wow.
And found it to be very helpful.
Okay. So pivoting just a little bit, we recently, our travel, you know, I work with the travel nursing team here very closely, and we've been talking about our messaging and how we want to take care of our nurses who are on assignment. And one of my favorite kind of concepts that has grown from this is taking care of the whole nurse. Just like in nursing school, we learn to take care of the whole patient. That's really the nursing process. And we want to extend that thinking to our nurse partners in the field. As a manager, as somebody mentoring and kind of nurturing your team, what are the ways that you try to do that?
Well, our team is a little unique in that we deal with crisis. So you can plan all you want and you can plan for the best and you can try to, you know, work on projects and all that. But we usually deal with crisis. And when I say crisis, it's not only about infection control or COVID or anything, but it's about compliance, or it's about, you know, we're going to get shut down in 5 days or we're going to get shut down in 10 days or our compliance date's next Tuesday. I had a call this morning. Our compliance date's next Tuesday and we don't know what we're doing. We need help. So
compliance, like, no matter that they have to be compliant with the survey results.
Right. Yeah. And you know, this is their last chance and we're just now getting a call. So you could have everything planned out and then the next thing you know, you're in another crisis mode, and that's how we live. So back to your original question, I feel like as a manager, I have to help. I have to understand that, first of all, that I am a little bit different than, let's say, the other directors that are on the same level of me and in my organization, because they have more of a ability to plan things out. Not that they're not super busy. I'm not saying that, but you know, it's different than a crisis situation type. We really do want to be there for our clients when they need us, even if it's at the, you know, at the last minute, or if it's a client we've never had before. And, you know, we get a call from their legal counsel and we want to help them. So, you know, we may be the only one that's left that can help them get out of this. So we try very hard not to, you know, turn people away. We try to help them. But as a manager, I feel like my job is to make sure that the team is supported. I mean, I'm in the field myself and I know what it's like. I know what it's like staying in hotels. I know what it's like traveling. I know what it's like to make sure they have the tools they need to do their job and the support, the calls. I mean, I got calls this weekend about a special turnaround we're doing and the nurse, that's just really what she needed was just to talk to me. You know what I mean? Like, right. I feel like she just needed that lifeline, you know, that, and she was on site in a center that's a turnaround situation. And she had it all together. She knew what she was doing. She just needed to hear from me that
needed a
good I'm coffee. Here for her and okay, let's do this, this, and this, you know, and but she already had it and she knew what she was doing. She just needed that lifeline. So I kind of look at myself as that lifeline, no matter whether I'm on site or if it's the middle of the night or if it's the weekend, whatever, I'm here for them. And if I don't have the answer, I'll be the first person to say, you know what? I don't know that, but let's figure it out and I'll get back to you. There, every problem has a solution. We will figure this out. So that's how I see my role is very collaborative. This is a tough job. I mean, whether you're working in a skilled nursing center or you're a consultant, you know, I think that a lot of people think, oh, consulting's easy, but it's not. It is a tough job, especially when there's a lot on the line with some of these centers and getting them back into compliance because Absolutely. Residents don't want to have to leave their homes.
Yeah.
And so we want to do that and keep them in their homes, keep them safe, keep people having their jobs and just help the centers get back into compliance.
And it has to be challenging kind of, yes, you're asked to come in and to help, but I'm sure on the ground, boots on the ground, there are challenges getting buy-in from staff. Buy-in from some of the management sometimes maybe. How do you guys navigate that? It has to be kind of tricky to come in and kind of like tell people what to do. How do you soften that? How do you make it palatable?
Well, you're right. So, and that's a good question. And that's probably one of the things we struggle with the most because most of the time they're on a tight time frame. You know, it's a crisis a lot of the time. And, you know, even when it wasn't such a crisis, but we were in the middle of the pandemic and we're going in and we're watching, you know, and teachable moments and helping people with the, you know, how to wear their PPE and everything. And, you know, staff look at you and say, wow, what's it like to be like the PPE police, you know, things like that. But you just have to take that stuff in stride and say, well, it's important because I want you to stay safe and I want our residents to stay safe. And, you know, it's always about doing the right thing when no one else is watching, you know, and trying to get that point across to them that you're here, you know, to help them. You want them to be able to keep their jobs and the residents not to move. And there are very challenging situations sometimes. We're dealing with one right now where there's a lot of pushback in a turnaround. And the key is to really get as close as you can to that floor staff and let them know that you're not a threat to them. You're there to help them and find out what is challenging for them and how you can help them through it. And all you have to do is build that relationship with a couple of them. And the next thing you know, you're in, and they'll listen to you. They want to do good for you. And, you know, you want to praise them too for the good things that you see them do. Because a part of our job is just the nature of it is to find the things that are not in compliance and try to fix them so that they don't get in trouble with the CMS or the state agency. So a lot of times it appears as if we're constantly picking, you know, pointing out the problem areas, but it's just as important to, you know, as things get fixed, as things look better, even if it's just a little tiny milestone, point that out, make sure that they know that they have made progress, and then just keep feeding that because people are tired. I mean, right now, you know, they're coming out of this pandemic. We're not out of it yet, but, you know, we're at a different stage than we were a year ago. And now the surveys have all started up again. And so they are very exhausted. People are exhausted. And so that's what we're dealing with.
A little traumatized at times, I would think. I mean, it's been, as you said, it's a whole year of just kind of constant crisis. It's really been a challenge for everyone. I was talking to our CEO the other day about, just to your point, you have this amazing ability to get buy-in from people kind of across the board. I feel like when you do webinars with our internal staff, they respect you and listen to you so much. Clearly, in with our clients, that's the case too. Do you have to think about that actively? Like, do you, before you interact with someone, do you think about the best way to communicate that feedback or that criticism to them? Or because you've done this for so long and you've worked in so many different roles, do you think it kind of comes naturally? Could you teach it?
I think there's times that I do a really good job at it. I appreciate your kind comments. And there's other times I reflect back and I think I should have handled that differently. You know what I mean? But as far as the clients go, there are times when I feel like they get beat up enough by the regulations and things. It's just the nature of it, that our role is to be that coach that, you know, I'm here with you. I'm here until we get through this and we're going to get through it. But then there are times when it's just not working. There are times when whoever's in charge on, you know, maybe the corporation or the owners have hired us, but whoever's there was who got them in trouble to begin with. And it's just not working no matter what. So then there has to be really tough conversations. So you have to be able to transition because you can't, if you just coach and you don't have the tough conversations, it's not going to happen. So, you know, they're not going to be back into compliance and the residents are going to lose their home. So you have to know when that time is and, you know, when you have to be very direct and very brutal sometimes of the, you know, with knowing that you care about them, you know, you care about them and you want them to be successful. But at the same time, if this doesn't change today, this is going to happen, you know, and you just have to put it out there. And sometimes you meet a lot of resistance with that, but most of the time people get in line of where they need to be. I think the biggest thing is people have to trust you. So if you say you're going to do something, you need to do it. If, you know, you need to, and this is something I work on constantly, is making sure that people understand what my expectations are, because sometimes I think everybody thinks like I do and nobody thinks the same as anybody else.
Guilty of that.
So I always have to make sure, okay, you know, here's the plan. Now let's talk about it. How do you see this rolling out? What's going to work? What's going to not? And then I think when you do that, you get buy-in And when you get buy-in and people don't want to fail. People don't want residents to lose their home. They're going to do it. And so I feel like that's the partnership that we try to create.
I think good nurses are good at being nurturing when we need to be, and being assertive when we need to be. I think that's a good, do you agree? It's kind of a nursing quality. We can pull that tough love when
I feel like you know, there's been times I've completely not did a great job. Sure. Then other times that I feel like, yeah, I knocked that one out of the park. But, and then I think sometimes, you know, you constantly work on yourself, you know, to do better. And then you learn sometimes really from the ones that you didn't do as good on, so that you'll be really a lot better for the next time.
It's so important to be self-aware that way. I mean, I think I do the same thing with patient interactions that I've had over the years. You do learn from that and grow from it. If you can look back and say, you know, I think I should have worded this differently, or that didn't fall quite the way I wanted it to. I think I learned just as much from my interactions with my patients and my colleagues than I have taught over the years, you know? All right. Let's take a quick break for our sponsor. Just one moment, and we'll be back in just a quick minute.
Clinically Relevant is sponsored by Leaderstat. For over 20 years, Leaderstat has provided exceptional staffing, recruitment, and consulting services to healthcare organizations nationwide. To learn how Leaderstat can help your organization with critical hiring needs or consulting expertise, visit leaderstat.com.
So you do a lot of work. We talked about ECHO, one of the panels that you're on, certainly the direct consulting that you do in collaboration with Leaderstat. What other, and I know that you, these opportunities like ECHO, you work outside of kind of your traditional role as a nurse consultant. How do you get connected with these opportunities? How do they kind of come across your desk?
Well, I think that the reputation of the company plays a huge part with that, and the reputation of our CEO. I think that when we, as a consulting team, you know, we successfully, so like for example, let's say we successfully turn around a situation. I call it a turnaround, but so that everyone understands what that is. So if the center is having major survey issues and we're called in to help them get back into compliance, and maybe there's a very limited window of how long that could be. It could be 2 weeks, it could be 30 days, whatever it might be. And we're able to do that, then that word gets out there that this is the kind of team that can do that. And I think you touched on this in the beginning, Katie, is that there are one unique thing about our organization, about Leaderstat, is that there's also staffing challenges sometimes in those kinds of situations. So it's the perfect partnership, you might say, because it's hard to correct things when you don't have people there to do it. So that's one thing with having a recruiting and staffing firm that also can partner with the consulting team to really work together to bring that center back into compliance. So while we're working on, you know, the consulting team is working on the compliance end, if there's some gaps in their staffing, we get those plugged and start, you know, moving them into, you know, a sustainable plan, and, you know, after even they're corrected. Because that's the other thing a lot of these governmental agencies will want to see. You know, they've said to me, well, what happens when you leave the building? And I'm like, let me show you what happens. And, you know, here's where we've been back and down. They have their staffing now filled. And there was a temporary time where we, you know, supplied that, but now they're doing it. And we, you know, we've not been doing these components because they are doing it. So our goal is to get them to be not only back into compliance, but keep that in that sustainability.
So it keeps kind of, you're able through your network to kind of grow and get connected with other clinical and operational leaders.
Yeah. So attorneys talk to attorneys, centers talk to centers, state agencies talk to other state agencies. We, even during the pandemic, we had governor's offices talking to other governor offices, and then, you know, that's having us assist them, things like that.
That's really, I mean, I know it was not the best time, but I think what a cool experience for you. I'm sure you really learned some, even more than you knew before, about how kind of government's role affected the day-to-day. It's really, I find it really interesting.
Yes. It has been a very life, life-changing experience for sure.
So what's next? What do you guys have planned next in consulting? Do you have different types of projects? Do you think as the pandemic evolves, do you think you'll continue get back to doing more survey prep? What's the plan?
Well, we're really busy right now with survey compliance and then continuing to, you know, live with the pandemic and the stages that we're in. I think the one thing too that we as a group have really been discussing is how can we even give back more? I know we kind of touched on, you know, what is some of the traumas that mm-hmm. some of our healthcare workers have went through. That's something that I want to do more with that, because I feel like that when you're going through a tragedy, so even on a personal, you know, if you think about a personal event, let's say you lost a loved one and you're traumatized and you've had to have the funeral and you're trying to deal with all that and everybody supports you and you're in the middle of it. It's when things start getting back to normal is when you sometimes crash.
Yeah.
And so that's what I worry about with our skilled nursing centers and our assisted livings, because we need people to stay in our industry. We need people to continue to love doing what they do. And they have been through so much. You know, they're tired, they're fatigued. They've watched residents they took care of for years pass away due to COVID. Some of them have experienced a lot of losses. I was in a center last week. I was talking to the infection control nurse and, you know, we're having a great conversation. We're doing a mock survey and she just starts crying. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she said, well, she just starts telling me about all these residents she lost. She told me she had COVID. She told me that on Christmas Eve, she lost her mother. And on New Year's Eve, she lost her sister, all to COVID. And now she's trying to still navigate all of this. And I mean, I just had so much admiration for her because, you know, she also was very concerned about what if we have a resurgence? What about the variants in the community? They're not taking it as serious. People aren't getting vaccinated. You know, she's got all these worries because look what she's went through. And she's worried that also that people are going to leave our business.
Profession. Absolutely.
Yeah, because they don't want to do this anymore. And so, you know, me and her had a really long talk about that. And I feel like that is something to answer your question. I feel like that is something that as a team, you know, whether it's our team as well as other teams, that we really got to address, because it's not, you know, something like that's not just going to go away what we went through. I mean, everybody's went through something different with this pandemic, but I feel like I'm a little bit biased because I've lived through it with the nursing centers. I just feel like they've been hit so hard mm-hmm. that we've got to take care of them or it's not going to be a good outcome for them and for the workers. So
I agree wholeheartedly.
I feel like it's not over. Even if they would say that, you know, right. the government would say, okay, no more COVID after today or something like that, we still are going to have the aftermath in our centers.
Evolving.
And now, you know, right or wrong, because we've got to have regulations. Now the regulations are hitting hard again. You know, they put a hold on surveys for a while. Now everything's coming back. And so that stress on top of what they're already dealing with is a lot. That's what I want to help them with.
I'm right there with you. I think it is so important. Nursing at large, I mean, our profession has taken the brunt of this. I know so many friends who are still in the hospital or in private practice saying, I'm living in two different worlds. My world at work is COVID, PPE, strict precautions. And then I leave, especially here in South Carolina, because it's a relatively open state, somewhat like Florida. And you leave work and go and life is almost back to normal. And for so many people, it's a real black and white kind of dichotomy there and hard for them to reconcile, I think, sometimes. So I agree. I hope that one of the initiatives that we can work on in the next year is really outreach and supporting our healthcare providers and heroes and nurses and really kind of elevating the profession and paying them back for what mm-hmm. has happened over the last year.
Yes.
It's important. So and that's our next goal, right?
Getting those resources, you know, like professionals involved, you know, that know how to deal with these kinds of things as well is really key. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think just a refocus of not assuming that everybody's just going to bounce back, but an actual plan, you know, and let's try to put the resources where they need to be to make long-term care better than ever. I think there's so many good people out there. I ran into a couple people this weekend that are young and they are going through nursing school and they want to focus on, you know, geriatrics. And I was just thrilled because I was like, and I asked them, I said, well, after everything that you've seen on TV about, you know, nursing centers and what they went through and everything, they said, because we really think we can make a difference there. You know, we want to do that. We love the elderly and that's what we want to do, you know? And I was just thrilled because it used to be, you heard that a lot more. And during the pandemic, you didn't hear that as much, you know, people were getting out of long-term care. So
that makes me happy. That's great.
Yeah, I think that it is such a rewarding field and I would encourage anybody that, you know, has any interest at all to go in that direction, because you can, it's just like, you could do anything there. I mean, you could expand yourself as a nurse and even in other professions, in so many different ways to make a huge impact.
Absolutely. It definitely, I think, like we mentioned, obviously my specialty is kind of the other end with motherhood and babies, but healthcare, if you are open to it, teaches you so much. I mean, you really get to see, one of the docs I used to work with used to say, when you take care of people, you hear their stories. And so it really changes you and kind of opens your eyes to the world and makes you, if you're open to it, I think a more empathetic person. It's really rewarding. Are there any specific moments like that over the past year that you can think of, like the infection control nurse, where you really felt like you walked away thinking, wow, that just changed how I thought of that person or of my role or your experiences? That's a big question.
Well, I think, you know, there's been so many, like even from things that would make you laugh to things that would make you cry. Mm-hmm. I mean, from, you know, a resident who looks at you and says, is it over yet? You know, because he's like, you know, he's just so tired of it too, to, you know, staff, you know, or maybe a physician that calls me and says, you know, I need to know your opinion on this, you know, and, you know, that's very rewarding to know that, you know, you have physicians reaching out to you to ask questions. But I think that probably the thing that sticks the most is just in general, everyone trying to do what they think is right, even though the guidelines aren't what we were always taught. You know what I mean? Like, and then you have the whole community, a lot of the misinformation that's out there that people buy into. And then some people believe that, and then they're trying, you know, so I feel like even though those may not all be like moments that should stand out as like something that's you take with you and say, this is the best things that happened in my career. But at the same time, they're very life-changing and they make you really think about things a lot differently and how everybody, like I try really hard, even in my own family, people have their own opinions about vaccinations, their own opinions about monoclonal antibodies or whatever it might be. And I try to get in there, in, you know, like without being judgmental, what are the barriers here, or how can we get more education, or how do I see it the way you're seeing it, you know, so that I can help understand.
Immersing yourself kind of in their point of view.
Yeah.
To try to make, maybe not even change their mind, but at least understand.
Yeah. And, you know, you want to really encourage them to do the right thing because you don't want any negative outcome to them. But at the same time, there's a really, you know, there's a lot of really strong opinions about some of this stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I never saw that before because usually, you know, in healthcare, you know, you have guidelines and you're supposed to follow them. And then, you know, I mean, but it's just been totally different.
It's dragged so many things out into the open, I think. So many conversations that are now mainstream that used to be not as common, you know, whether it's the vaccination question or where you get your information. It's been eye-opening for me too. Well, thank you for your time today. We can wrap up. Is there anything else you want to add to our conversation?
I think it's great that you're highlighting, you know, different people in the healthcare field. I think we need that. I'm honored to be your first one. I think that I'm just thrilled about that. And
we'll keep bringing good clinical leaders on and
continue to work together to navigate where we're at. Hopefully a year from now, we'll be in even a better place with the pandemic than we are today. And can say, you know, wow, look where we've came.
I hope so too. Fingers crossed. Thank you, Teresa.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Clinically Relevant. This podcast has been produced by CD Voices and brought to you by our sponsor, Leaderstat. Check us out at leaderstat.com/clinically-relevant. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support this podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review.